Blog Talk Radio.
Nobody pray for me. It been a day for me. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I remember syrup sandwiches and crime allowances. Finesse a nigga with some counterfeits, but now I'm counting this. Parmesan with my accountant, look just like I'm down in this. You say with my boobay, tastes like too late for the analyst. Girl, I can buy a Westie world with my face stuff. Ooh, that pussy good, won't you sit it on my taste buds? I get way too petty, won't you let me do the extras? Pull up on your block and break it down, we playing Tetris. AM to the PM, PM to the AM phone. Piss out your per diem, you just gotta hate them phone. If I quit your BM, I still rock Mercedes phone. If I quit this season, I still be the greatest funk.
My left stroke just went viral.
Right stroke put a baby in a spiral. Soprano C, we like to keep it on the high note. It's levels to it, you and I know. Bitch, be humble.
Hold up,
bitch, sit down.
Hold up,
be humble.
Hold up, bitch,
sit down.
Be humble.
Bitch, sit down.
Be
humble.
Bitch,
sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Sit down. Be humble. Bitch, sit down. Be humble.
Bitch,
sit down. Who that nigga thinking that he frontin' on women? Get the fuck off my stage. I'm the semen. Get the fuck off my dick. That ain't right. I make a play fucking up your whole life. I'm so fucking sick and tired of the Photoshop. Show me something natural like Afro on Richard Pryor. Show me something natural like ass with some stretch marks. Still a take you down right on your mama's couch in polo black. Hey, this shit way too crazy. Hey, you do not amaze me. Hey, I blew cool from AC. Hey, Obama just paged me. Hey, I don't fabricate it. Hey, most of y'all be faking. Hey, I stay modest about it. Hey, she elaborated. Hey, this that Grey Poupon, that AV on that TED Talk. Hey, watch my soul speak, you let the med talk. Hey, if I kill a nigga, it won't be the alcohol. Hey, I'm the realest nigga after all. Bitch, be humble.
Hold up, bitch,
sit down.
Hold up,
be humble.
Hold up, bitch,
sit down.
Be
humble.
Bitch,
sit down.
Be
humble.
Hold up, bitch,
sit down. Be
humble.
Hold
up,
sit down.
Be
humble.
Hold up, bitch,
sit down.
Bitch,
sit down.
Be
humble.
Bitch,
sit down.
You are listening to the Marty Smith Show.
Have accused the president of criminal violation of the federal campaign laws. They say Trump directed, that's the word, lawyer Michael Cohen to cover up a campaign contribution in the form of payments to two women with whom he had sexual relations. This comes from the Southern District of New York, not Robert Mueller, not the so-called 17 Democrats the president says are working against him, not the deep state, not from a witch hunt. It's from one of the two sentencing memos filed in the case of Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, today, which are shedding new light on the president's potential legal exposure. As Trump's longtime fixer, Cohen pleaded guilty in August to campaign finance violations and making hush payments to two women on Trump's behalf. And now tonight's sentencing memo makes clear that, quote, with respect to both payments, Cohen acted in coordination with and at the direction of individual one. That's the president. We're also getting new insight into what Cohen has told the special counsel in the ongoing probe of potential collusion with Russia. According to the filing from Mueller's office, Cohen not only provided information about the Moscow real estate project, Trump Tower over there, that Trump pursued during the election, but also provided information about attempts by other Russian nationals to reach the Trump campaign. According to the memo, quote, Cohen spoke with a Russian national who claimed to be a trusted person in the Russian Federation who could offer the campaign, here's a phrase, political synergy, in other words, working together, Trump and Russia against Hillary. Prosecutors say Cohen provided useful information concerning certain discrete Russia-related matters core to this investigation that he obtained by virtue of his regular contact with company executives. That was Trump company executives. That's how Cohen got the information he's been using to try to save himself. And Cohen also provided relevant and useful information concerning his contacts with persons connected to the White House itself after January of 2017. However, despite Cohen's assistance, prosecutors in the Southern District of New York still recommended a substantial term of imprisonment for Michael Cohen, given the nature of his crimes. Also tonight, prosecutors detailed how Trump's former campaign chair, Paul Manafort, lied to them repeatedly while he was supposedly cooperating with them. What a news night. I'm joined right now by Ken Delaney, a reporter for NBC's Investigative Unit, Julie Ainsley, a national security and justice reporter for NBC News, Barbara McQuaid, a former U.S. attorney out in Michigan, Mimi Rocha, former U.S. assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. I want to start with Ken. I want to focus on one thing first. I want to focus on the criminal violation of the campaign laws, this effort to cover up what is really a campaign contribution of $130,000, $150,000, adding it up, to cover up these affairs with these two women. The president directed that activity, according to this this memorandum today. Ken.
Yes, Chris. And in fact, you know, Michael Cohen already stood up in court and said that when he pleaded guilty to these charges in the Southern District of New York. But what's different is today is that the U.S. Attorney's Office, a representative of the United States of America, is endorsing that view in black and white in a court filing that that Cohen acted in coordination with and at the direction of individual one, Donald Trump, who had become the president of the United States. Now, the reason I've been told it's not accurate to call him an unindicted co-conspirator because there still is an issue of criminal intent. The way the campaign finance law is written, prosecutors have to prove for a violation that you had an intent to violate the law. Normally you hear ignorance of the law is no excuse. In this case, ignorance of the law can be an excuse. If Donald Trump was told by a lawyer, hey, this payment is okay, it's not a violation of the campaign finance law, that would be clearly a defense. But the facts outlined here suggest a scheme, suggest people who knew what they were doing was wrong, particularly Cohen. And clearly, if a president of the United States was able to be indicted, this is a case prosecutors would pursue to the last document, to the last witness, Chris.
And just to make your point, the prosecutors in this case in the Southern District of New York, the federal prosecutors basically nominated and confirmed by this Republican Senate, these people say that Michael Cohen had criminal intent. They said he knew the law, that he had worked
Absolutely.
In politics. He knew exactly this was a cover-up. Julia, your thoughts on that, that Cohen, directed by the individual one, the president, is accused of knowing what he was doing. Is it possible or plausible to assume that the guy who told him what he was doing didn't know it was a criminal act? The president.
Yeah, Chris, before I came out here, I saw that individual one was the number one trend on Twitter, at least in this region. And it's because individual one is named in both of these sentencing memos we've seen tonight from the Southern District and from the special counsel. In the Mueller memo, individual one is the owner of the company, the real estate company that Cohen works for. That would be Trump Organization. That would be Donald Trump. And he is the one who I'm reading here when it's conferred with Cohen about reaching out to the Russian government. Then when you talk about the payments to the women that Ken was just discussing, the individual one goes on to become the president of the United States. Pretty clear that that's Donald Trump. And that he also worked with him, talked to him about the payments to those women. So in a lot of ways, it cannot be underscored that these memos really aren't about Cohen. I mean, they are about Cohen, but they really point to the president in a way we hadn't
sure.
seen before and point to this administration, not just the campaign, but what's going on inside the White House.
Let me go to Barbara on this because I think the language is very strong. I was really impressed by the spirit of the prosecutor's language. They talk about how people go door to door in politics. They look envelopes. They do all the scut work of politics in an open, transparent way because that's what the law and our whole democracy is about, is transparent politics. And this skullduggery, this middle of the night going to that magazine, getting them to catch and kill, getting them to kill a story about these affairs, all this done purposely and deliberately and intricately to cover it up, to make it non-transparent. They really threw the book at this. They took this campaign violation as dead criminal activity.
And one of the things that a prosecutor is required to do in a sentencing memorandum is describe to the judge the nature and seriousness of the offense. And here they describe this as a very serious offense. The whole purpose of campaign finance laws is to provide transparency in who's paying for things and how they're being run. And in fact, they use the word cloud, that Michael Cohen and individual one went out of their way and took deliberate steps to cloud that transparency by making these payments to hide the truth from the public so that they can cast an informed vote. When we have a democracy, it's based on the ability of voters to cast an informed vote. And when you're hiding the truth from the American people, then that democracy breaks down. That's a serious crime.
Well, while tonight's multiple court filings appear to indicate that President Trump himself could be facing new legal exposure, including implications in a federal crime, the president, or individual one, as he's called here, responded tonight with a show of confidence.
You are listening to The Marty Smith Show.
Someday at Christmas, men won't be boys, playing with bombs like kids play with toys. One warm December, our hearts will see a world where men are free. Someday at Christmas, there'll be no war, when we have learned what Christmas is for, when we have found what life's really worth, there'll be peace on earth. Someday all our dreams will come to be. Someday in a world where men are free. Maybe not in time for you and me, but someday at Christmas time. Someday at Christmas we'll see a land with no hungry children, no empty hands. One happy morning.
The real estate company that Cohen worked for, that would be Vision, that would be Donald Trump, and he is the one who, I'm reading here, what is conferred with Cohen about reaching out to the Russian government. Then when you talk about the payments to the women that Ken was just discussing, goes on to become the president of the United States. Pretty clear that that's Donald Trump, and that he also worked with him, talked to him about the payments to those women. So in a lot of ways, it cannot be underscored that these memos really aren't about Cohen. I mean, they are about Cohen, but they really point to the president in a way we haven't seen before, and point to this administration, not just the campaign, but what's going on inside the White House.
Let me get a Barb on this, because I think the language is very strong. I was really impressed by the spirit of the prosecutor's language. They talk about how people go door to door in politics. They look envelopes. They do all the scut work of politics in an open, transparent way, because that's what the law and our whole democracy is about, is transparent politics. And this skullduggery, this middle of the night, going to that magazine, getting them to catch and kill, getting them to kill a story about these affairs, all this done purposely and deliberately and intricately to cover it up, to make it non-transparent. They really threw the book at this. They took this campaign violation as dead criminal activity.
Yeah, one of the things that a prosecutor is required to do in a sentencing memorandum is describe to the judge the nature and seriousness of the offense. And here they describe this as a very serious offense. The whole purpose of campaign finance laws is to provide transparency in who's paying for things and how they're being run. And in fact, they use the word cloud, that Michael Cohen and Individual One went out of their way and took deliberate steps to cloud that transparency by making these payments to hide the truth from the public so that they can cast an informed vote. When we have a democracy, it's based on the ability of voters to cast an informed vote. And when you're hiding the truth from the American people, then that democracy breaks down. That's a serious crime.
Well, tonight's multiple court filings appear to indicate that President Trump himself could be facing new legal exposure, including implications in a federal crime. The president, or Individual One, as he's called here, responded tonight with a show of confidence. He tweeted, "This is outlandish. Totally clears the president. Thank you." Well, that's out. This is crazy talk. Let me go to Mimi on this. You know what's interesting? How character and morality all come to play here. That, you know, sometimes progressives play this game and sometimes conservatives play this game, and Trumpites, whatever you call them. They say personal behavior doesn't matter. It's all about whether your politics and your ideology conforms to the candidate. And it doesn't matter who the person is. Here we are talking about a guy and his affairs and the way his character shows in having the affairs and his character showing and covering up the affairs and how he uses his lawyer to do it and how he uses his money to do it. And now it's all about protecting his chance to hold public office. It all integrates together. That's what I find. And the prosecutor talked like that. They hit this guy morally. That's the way I read it, that document. It wasn't some cold, secular document. It's saying this is what brings the toxicity into American politics, these affairs being paid off, women being paid off, power being used to snuff out the truth and not enlighten democracy, but to deny the truth to democracy and the voters. Your thoughts?
Absolutely, President. Look, this is a typical Southern District and, frankly, you know, any U.S. Attorney Office type of document where you talk about the purpose of the laws and the spirit of the laws. And that's important, as Barb said, you know, to explain to the judge in terms of sentencing. And Judge Pauley is a judge who will takes those laws very seriously. And, you know, I think it's important to point out here that there was a phrase used in the Southern District memo about the evidence against Cohen being, quote, overwhelming, and that he didn't cooperate out of, you know, sort of the goodness of his heart or spirit, but because he was really caught red-handed. So for Trump to say that this clears him, we don't know all of the evidence that is, quote, overwhelming against Cohen. But I'm willing to go out on a limb here right now and say that given what the Southern District has put, as Ken said, in black and white in writing about the president's actions, I'm willing to bet that there is good evidence that Trump had the requisite intent to commit this crime as well.
And I'll go out on a limb and say this is the biggest act of self-delusion since Baghdad Bob, who said they were winning the war. I want to bring in Ari Melber, who's been brilliant on this. He's MSNBC's chief lick correspondent as well as the host of The Beat. Ari, I love the way you put it up tonight. And I thought I want to go back to a deeper question. When Trump got away for a while, for a few weeks, with the Access Hollywood tape, that everybody said was going to kill him, Reince Priebus was going to walk over it. Smart Republicans, decent Republicans said, "The smell's too terrible here that they would stand and survive." And here we have a president basically being charged by the Federal District of New York up there with basically covering up a couple of friends with money and power and doing it in a way that I can get away with this crap. This is how I get away.
I can get away. Yeah.
Sing about, sing it all out. TV shows when you're away from SoCal? Take KEID with you wherever you go with the iHeartRadio app for your smartphone. You can hear all your favorite radio stations, hosts, music, and even create your own
technical difficulties.
And download it now and never miss a rush at some Hannity, Beck, a local story, or anything KEID has to say. Download it now. iHeartRadio app for your smartphone. And heart KEID wherever you go.
News, I'm Joel Nato. The ex-lawyer for the president could be facing jail time. These filings in federal court hit the president's former attorney, Michael Cohen. One of them from the Southern District of New York says Cohen committed extensive fraud to pay off women who allegedly had affairs with the president. The other from special counsel Robert Mueller and his team chastises Cohen for lying to Congress about possible Trump connections to Russians. Joy Piazza, Fox News.
A jury in Charlottesville, Virginia, convicting James Alex Fields of murder after driving his car into a crowd at a white nationalist rally last year. His lawyer claimed Fields panicked, afraid for his life in the crowd, but prosecutors say he did it deliberately, killing activist Heather Heyer. Tanisha Hudson witnessed the killing.
Even his body language in court, I felt like he knew it within himself that he was going to be guilty.
Fields is facing life in prison. This is Fox News.
Now traffic on the Patriot AM 1150.
Good evening. We do have a crash in the Florence area. 405 northbound. This is Artesia Boulevard. It's blocking the two right lanes right now. Stop and go from Western Avenue to Anaheim on the 91 east side of Tustin Avenue. Still right here blocking the left lane. It's stop and go from Kramer to State. And for Corona, still have a crash working on the 15 southbound after Magnolia. Blocking the two left lanes. It's stop and go from the 91. Newfound Valley, 405 northbound at Warner Avenue, disabled vehicle. They're blocking the runway. It's stop and go from the 73. Traffic is sponsored by the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Give the gift of Dodger baseball this holiday season. Explore various 2019 ticket plans that give you access to opening day, postseason games, the Yankees series, and much more. All plans offer a variety of great seating options. Visit Dodgers.com/season tickets. You are listening to the Patriot AM 1150.
Dell's dedicated small business advisors give you tech advice and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. And now's the time to save on select business PCs with 8th-gen Intel Core processors until the end of the year. Maximize this year's budget and find the right tech solution for your business. Plus, get free shipping on everything. Visit Dell.com/business deals or call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell small business advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Hey guys, good news. The expensive little blue pill is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices. And now get your first month supply for just $5 at forhims.com/happy. Hims connection with real doctors online who can prescribe the medication. And a pharmacy sends it right to your door. So easy. To get your first order for just $5, you need to go to forhims.com/happy. That's forhims.com/happy.
Website for full details. Not all services through the AMS platform are available in all 50 states.
For official rules and more information about contests on this station, go to patriot.la/rules.
When wealthy people are studied, you know what their planning window is. When they make a decision, they ask themselves, how is this decision going to affect me 10 and 20 years from now? When they study poor people that remain poor and never get out, and they ask them what their planning window is, you know what it sounds like? Thank God it's Friday. Party! Oh God, it's Monday. They have a planning window of a nap. There's no horizon in their life.
The Dave Ramsey Show. Weekdays at 3 on the Patriot. AM 1150.
KEIB AM 1150 conducts various register to win contests on air and online that provide a variety of prizes for listeners to win. Unless otherwise announced or stated in the official contest rules, in general, on air and online contests are open to legal residents of the 50 United States or if a local contest within KEIB's DMA 18 years and older. Winners are selected at random at the end of the registration period, which varies for each individual giveaway. Value of any prize awarded to a winner may be reported for tax purposes as required by law, and on average, prize value values range from $25 to $1,000, or as stipulated in the specific contest rules. During the registration period, entrants may generally enter once daily before the deadline. Listen here daily for more information or visit patriot.la for all on-air and online contest opportunities and official rules. No purchase or payment of any kind is necessary to enter or win. Purchase does not increase odds of winning. Void in any location where prohibited or restricted by law. Employees and immediate families of iHeartMedia and contest sponsors or their subsidiaries and affiliates are not eligible to participate.
Because when it comes to the fight for truth, the fuss never stops.
Michael Pelkey in for Buck Sexton on this Friday night. It is Pearl Harbor Day. We remember Pearl Harbor today. We'll get into that. About an hour from now, I'm going to share with you the memories of a woman in her 80s who was there just a few hundred yards away from where the bombing happened as a young child. And she never told her grandkids about it. She never told her nieces and nephews about it because that's what the greatest generation did. They kept the bad stuff inside and pushed forward. So you have to stick around for that. We'll tell you the story of Aunt B. Bazansky that was just told after 77 years of keeping it inside. But we have other issues we need to get to tonight. I told you I wanted to get some help understanding the arrest of the chief financial officer of a Chinese tech company, a big tech company that makes a lot of cell phones. They're kind of like the Apple of China, I believe. So I need to bring in an expert, and our friend, longtime guest on many shows I've been on, Gordon Chang, a great author, a great speaker, a guy who understands the region, is squeezing us in tonight. Hey, Gordon, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you so much, Mike.
I always appreciate your clarity on this region because you understand it so well because you've been studying it forever. This situation with the arrest of, she's known as Sabrina Meng or Kathy Meng. I can't pronounce her last name correctly. But this seems to be sparking some international tension, seriously, between America and China, correct?
Oh, certainly. Beijing is just enraged that anyone would dare to arrest Communist Party royalty. And she's the daughter of the founder of Huawei Technologies, which is, as you point out, the largest telecom equipment manufacturer in the world. And Huawei is critical to China's future. We've all heard of this Made in China 2025 initiative, where China hoped to dominate 10 sectors. China actually added an 11th sector earlier this year. That's 5G wireless communications. Well, Huawei is China's hope to dominate 5G. And so, therefore, she's critical because she is slated to become CEO of Huawei. Now she's the CFO, but at this time right now, her future is very much in doubt.
And it's in doubt because she's been arrested in Canada and may be extradited to the United States for, I believe, trading with Iran and breaking our agreement that we wouldn't be doing business with Iran. Is that the easiest way to boil it down?
That's right. The allegation is that she was involved in Huawei's transactions with Iran that violated American sanctions. And so this is a serious offense, of course. And it comes at a time where the United States has had real problems with ZTE, which is almost a sister company to Huawei. ZTE has now violated two settlement agreements with the United States. And I think basically the Trump administration just said, enough is enough. And so they decided to lower the hammer on Huawei, which has been known to be violating these sanctions for quite some time, and also which was built upon stolen Cisco technology. So there's a lot of grievances here.
A lot of grievances between America and, there are no real private companies in China because the government seems to have its hands in everything. But in the case of Huawei, I've heard senators like Ted Cruz say that Huawei is also a concern, not just because of their relationship to Iran, their dealings with Iran, but that they have back-channel connections in all their technology that feeds information back to the mothership in China. Is that paranoia, or is there a real concern for Huawei and ZTE and any Chinese company using their technology to feed information back home?
Yeah, that is certainly a reasonable suspicion, which is certainly going to become even more important to us. And the reason is that, as I mentioned, Huawei is involved in 5G. 5G is the Internet of Things. It will connect everything in your home, almost everything in your life. And if Huawei is part of the backbone of the country, they'll know. And for instance, you know, you use your toaster. Now, the 5 Eyes Intelligence Sharing Consortium includes the United States and Canada. 4 of the 5 countries have banned Huawei from 5G networks. The only country that hasn't done that in the 5 Eyes is Canada. So this is going to be especially fascinating to watch the interplay among Beijing, Ottawa, and Washington.
Well, I knew New Zealand and Australia had just recently blocked the 5G from Huawei into their telecommunications companies. I didn't realize Canada was the holdout. And I have to wonder if there's some negotiation going on right now between the State Department and Canada to get them on board with us. Gordon, let me ask you, because I know I don't have a whole lot of time with you. Gordon Chang is with us. In terms of when this arrest happened, when this detention happened, there's speculation that it happened as Donald Trump was sitting down with Xi Jinping last Saturday. Is there any truth to that, and does that create any additional tension?
Well, it's certainly true. Meng Wanzhou was detained Saturday night. That's the same time that Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, and President Trump sat down for dinner in Buenos Aires. So that's certainly true. The question is whether this was coincidence, whether President Trump knew about it. Those things are up in the air. John Bolton, the national security advisor, said that the president was not informed that the arrest was going to occur. A lot of people find that hard to believe, but I think it's probably true. I'm sure that Trump knew that there was going to be an arrest at some point, but he probably didn't know the timing. But the point right now is that we have so many challenges from China, and our responses are going to bump into each other. So this is going to happen more and more in the future.
This is going to be really interesting to watch. Where does it go next, Gordon?
Well, there was a bail hearing today for Ms. Meng. The decision probably is going to be Monday. I think that she certainly is a flight risk because Beijing wants her back. But, you know, we'll see from there. And then, of course, Canada has to decide on the extradition. And if she is extradited, she's going to be brought before trial, I think, in the Eastern District of New York. In other words, Brooklyn. And this will be a long drama because each of these steps could require months.
Wow. So this is certainly this is a global controversy, and this could end up in our backyard in the Eastern District of New York. And as you said, it could go on for months and months and months. And that could have an impact on this 90 days we have as the clock ticks to make a trade deal with China. And as you saw, the market kind of had another bad day today. If we don't solve this, I think that could have a chilling effect on that 90-day timeline.
Well, I'm sure that it will. The Chinese are really upset about this. Now, it could have a good effect, could have a bad effect. We just don't know. But we know that Beijing has demanded her back, has used extremely strong and undiplomatic language. And we know that China will do everything it can to pressure both Canada and the United States to release this CFO of Huawei.
Okay, I'll keep an eye on that. Gordon Chang, a great author, great speaker, a guy who understands the region. Gordon, I got for a summer reading gift, I got Fateful Ties, History of America's Preoccupation with China. But that's not you. That's somebody else. What's the new book I need to be looking out for?
Well, for me, no new book. There is a Gordon H. Chang at Stanford. I'm Gordon G. Chang. But people can read what I write at my Twitter handle, Gordon G. Chang. My website is GordonChang.com.
GordonChang.com. Gordon G. Chang on Twitter, a guy who's got his finger on the pulse of what's going on in China and the region. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you joining us on a Friday evening.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
And there he goes. He really does understand.
Because as I mentioned, in the Southern District, you bring up Donald Trump at these new filing sites. They say Michael Cohen not only made illegal payments, we've heard about that, but they say in court, he made them, quote, in coordination and at the direction of individual one. That is Donald Trump. I'm thrilled that as part of our coverage, Neil Kochel joined us, and he argued as a legal matter, prosecutors have concluded that Donald Trump is on the hook for that felony. Our viewers may recognize you. Of course, you've served in many high-profile legal positions at the Justice Department, including as acting Solicitor General. So I know when you speak about what constitutes a felony, you don't do so lightly. Give us your analysis of that part of tonight's news, sir.
Sure. So to me, the big news tonight is not about Michael Cohen. It's not about Paul Manafort. It's about one person, Donald Trump, and this filing that you just started to highlight that was made today in the Michael Cohen case really does, for the first time, you have federal prosecutors essentially saying that Donald Trump committed a felony. And here's the way that works. First of all, this is not a document by Mueller. This is filed by Trump's own Justice Department, by the Southern District prosecutors in New York. And there's three pieces to the claim. The first piece is the one you just read, which is from page 11 of the filing, which says that Cohen made these campaign finance payments at the direction of Trump. And what we're talking about here are payments made to two women for their silence, for having alleged affairs with Trump, and they were going to go public. And what happened was that Cohen paid those folks and did so at a time when you're only supposed to get $2,700 to a campaign invested for a very important reason. Congress has said we don't want rich people buying elections. We want transparency in our election process. So at page 11, the Southern District prosecutors say, no, that was done at the direction of Trump. Then the next key, page 12, at page 12, the prosecutors say, the quote, the agreement's principal purpose was to suppress this woman's.
Wow.
And what we're talking about here are payments made to two women for their silence, for having alleged affairs with Trump, and they were going to go public. And what happened was that Cohen paid those folks and did so. First of all, this is not a document by Mueller. This is filed by Trump's own Justice Department, by the Southern District prosecutors in New York. And there's three pieces to the claim. The first piece is the one you just read, which is from page 11 of the filing, which says that Cohen made these campaign finance payments at the direction of Trump. And what we're talking about here are payments made to two women for their silence, for having alleged affairs with Trump, and they were going to go public. And what happened was that Cohen paid those folks and did so at a time when you're only supposed to get $2,700 to a campaign invested for a very important reason. Congress has said we don't want rich people buying elections. We want transparency in our election process. So at page 11, the Southern District prosecutors say, no, that was done at the direction of Trump. Then the next key, page 12, at page 12, the prosecutors say, the quote, the agreement's principal purpose was to suppress this woman's story so as to prevent the story from influencing the election, So they're taking away the Trump defense, which was there in the Edwards case. Oh, I was doing it to protect my private life or something like that, these payments. They're saying, no, this was done with the purpose of influencing the election. That's what the campaign finance laws are all about. And then lastly, page 23, a long description by the prosecutors of just how serious this violation of the campaign finance laws are, how it strikes a blow to our democracy. There's some pretty soaring language in there. You put all three of those things together, the Southern District federal prosecutors are alleging that the president committed a felony. They're not indicting him. He would have, you know, he has any number of defenses available to him, but that's the document they filed. That's some of the documents I have not seen in my lifetime.
You say you haven't seen that in your lifetime. What you're speaking to is that language of direction, you're saying legally makes Donald Trump, in the eyes of these prosecutors, culpable.
together, the Southern District federal prosecutors are alleging that the president committed a felony. They're not indicting him. He would have, you know, he has any number of defenses available to him, but that's the document they filed. That's the document I have not seen in my lifetime.
You say you haven't seen that in your lifetime. What you're speaking to is that language of direction. You're saying legally make Donald Trump, in the eyes of these prosecutors, culpable for the criminal campaign finance violation that Cohen has admitted to.
Correct.
And so is that the end of it? Or anyone watching is going to think, okay, counselor, that sounds like a big deal. You just said you've never seen anything like that in your life. Do they do more with that? This is separate from the Mueller probe. Do they do more with that, the idea that Trump directed this criminal campaign activity?
Right. So if this were any ordinary individual, prosecutors then would be entitled to bring a case. I mean, what they've said here, they're saying that we have, you know, reasonable grounds to believe this. And so, you know, presumably they have evidence besides Michael Cohen's own statement. They have some corroborating evidence to suggest that this all actually happened. And yes, they could, under those circumstances, indict an ordinary person. Now, the Justice Department, in two opinions, has said that you may not be able to indict and try a sitting president. Now, there's some, you know, dispute about that, and maybe indictment, actually bringing the charges, is different. But so there's one question about what can Mueller do, what can the Southern District do in terms of can they indict the president? And then there's a whole separate realm of what happens in terms of impeachment. The standard is high crimes and misdemeanors in our Constitution.
Right. And certainly, before we even get there, I just want to pause on that piece of your analysis, because some of this gets into, as you say, uncharted territory. Are you basically telling us tonight, Neil, that if Donald Trump had lost the election, this is the kind of thing that as a citizen he would be indicted for along with Michael Cohen, and it's because he won the election, which this new filing argues was part of what Michael Cohen thought would help him win the election was this crime, that there's a kind of a reward then, a bonus?
Right, exactly. I mean, if those three statements that I isolated from the prosecutor's memo taken together establish a federal felony, and we do have a principle in America that no person is above the law. And at this point, right now, the thing that's protecting the president from indictment appears to be not that he is some, you know, law-abiding person. You know, there's a lot here to suggest that there is a crime that has been committed, and the only get-out-of-jail-free card he seems to be holding right now is the one that says, well, I'm a president, you can't indict me, go home.
So you're saying that is a huge deal. It jumped out to me as well in the filing, which is why I mentioned it earlier and why we're happy to have you here. In terms of journalistic rigor and fairness, I want to make sure we explore the other side of this, because this is an explosive thing here on a Friday night. We're talking about a filing that talks directly to court about the president being an unindicted co-conspirator of not just a felony in concept, but a felony that Michael Cohen has literally confessed to, which makes it worse for the president. On the flip side, apart from the constitutional arguments about indicting, which I think folks have heard about, isn't there also a defense of the president that he may have been dealing with someone who was overzealous and did this the wrong way, that even if he directed the underlying activity, hey, deal with this problem, he didn't direct, quote unquote, the criminal intent, meaning hide it, mislead the FEC, that kind of stuff, to a degree that it became a crime. Is there any defense for him there?
Sure. No, the president is going to be able to say, is going to try to say something like, look, I didn't intend it for campaign finance violations. I intended it to protect my family and my personal life. And it's
it's time.
kind of stuff to a degree that it became a crime. Is there any defense for him there?
Sure. So the president's going to be able to say, is going to try to say something like, look, I didn't intend it for campaign finance violations. I intended it to protect my family and my personal life and this and that. And all I'm saying is that what the allegations are in the filing today at page 12, when they say the principal purpose of the agreement was for campaign finance violations, if that's true, it knocks out that defense. Now, again, it's all got to be proven up in a court, just like any indictment. It's got to be proven up in a court. But what we're looking at today is something that really very seriously implicates the president directly in federal felonies.
And I would ask you how the president might understand this, but I'll go ahead and share. And spoiler alert, it's not much, but he's posting tonight, totally clears the president. Thank you, Neil.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's read the filing. So I think if you just read those three pages of the filing, you add them up, it's a pretty darn damning document. And I can assure you that no one I know would want to be cleared in this way.
I got to tell control room, someone's holding down the button, so I'm not hearing Neil. The audience is getting more of you than I am, Neil. Say something else or give some analysis and we'll fix my audio.
Okay, great. So, you know, look, I
now
think
I
what happened. Okay, great. So I think what the president is, you know, like many people, you know, willfully reading things that he's seeing and saying, oh, you know, this isn't a big deal. I'm totally cleared. But, you know, the words are the words, and the words are really darn damning right now. And if I'm the president tonight, I am beside myself and frankly frightened for the, you know, I know the president has a capacity for self-delusion, but this one's a hard one. Those words are black and white on the paper.
And then while I have you, the other big news is William Barr appointed to be the new attorney general taking over from Whitaker. You are in a position to know him and a lot of the people around him and know how DOJ works. What is your view of that appointment?
Well, first of all, it's just a relief. We have right now a fake attorney general, someone who I don't believe is actually constitutionally empowered to do the job. So anyone that the president nominates and gets through Senate confirmation is a step up from what we have right now. That's number one. Number two, Barr is an enormously distinguished, qualified person who served as a great attorney general, you know, a while ago, two decades ago. The question to me is not what did he do a long time ago as attorney general, but what are his views now? And he's taken some views that I think some have found troubling about the uranium investigation, calling for the president's targets to be investigated and the like. We'll have to see and figure out whether or not he's really kind of changed. You know, Donald Trump himself used to be a Democrat, so, you know, people change in two decades. And so, you know, I think it's his current record.
People change. You're listening to the Marty Smith Show.
Position to know him, a lot of the people around him, and know how DOJ works. What is your view of that appointment?
Well, first of all, it's just a relief. We have right now a fake attorney general, someone who I don't believe is actually constitutionally empowered to do the job. So anyone that the president nominates and gets through Senate confirmation is a step up from what we have right now. That's number one. Number two, Barr is an enormously distinguished, qualified person who serves as a great attorney general, you know, a while ago, two decades ago. The question to me is not what did he do a long time ago as attorney general, but what are his views now? And he's taken some views that I think some have found troubling about the uranium investigation, calling for the president's targets to be investigated and the like. We'll have to see and figure out whether or not he's really kind of changed. You know, Donald Trump himself used to be a Democrat, so, you know, people change in two decades. And so, you know, I think it's his current record now that we've got to evaluate. And, you know, I think on the special counsel stuff, I can tell you that back in 1999, when we were drafting the regulations, I think he saw eye to eye with the way we saw it, which was the Independent Counsel Act, that old statute after Watergate, was too strong a medicine and had dangerous constitutional ramifications, and that the special counsel regulations struck the right balance because they allowed for an independent prosecutor. And he went and actually testified on the Hill and celebrated that idea of an independent prosecutor sometimes when you have a politically sensitive investigation. So at least, again, if his old views are still his views today, that's a hardening step. It's certainly not like what Matthew Whitaker has said about the special counsel. So, my judgment is kind of reserved at this point because I want to see what he said today. But certainly his old views were good.
Well, that's very interesting coming from you, and particularly at a time where there is a rush, I think, with some reason to criticize a lot of what this president does no matter what, you're clearly looking into the depth of this individual, his record on these issues. And then, of course, he's going to go through a confirmation process, which, as we all know, you often learn new things. Hey, I'm Ari Melber from MSNBC. You can see more of our videos right here, or better yet, subscribe to our YouTube channel below.
You're listening to The Marty Smith Show.
Official known to have provided information for Mueller's Russia investigation, and sources say the questions to Kelly focused on potential obstruction of justice. This comes as sources say Kelly is poised to resign in the coming days. And on top of this, any moment, we are expecting court filings by Mueller, which could shed new light on the scope and direction of the probe. What is Paul Manafort accused of lying about in an alleged breach of his plea agreement? What will Michael Cohen's sentencing memo reveal about his cooperation with the Mueller team? And what is former FBI Director James Comey saying to lawmakers in closed-door testimony? Also today, we are following yet another shakeup in the administration. The president has nominated Bush 41's former attorney general to replace Jeff Sessions. He chose State Department spokesman Heather Nauert to replace Nikki Haley at the UN. And as mentioned, John Kelly looks to be on his way out. We'll be right back. And as mentioned, John Kelly on his way out. First, our CNN Justice correspondent Evan Perez, the chief political correspondent in Canada, who broke the news of the latest twist in the Mueller investigation. The chief of staff to the president
is being
interviewed by the special counsel over months.
That's right. In recent months, this has been a bit of a drama behind the scenes at the White House. And unlike, you know, the dozens of people who have gone in for interviews, John Kelly is different simply because not only because he's a chief of staff, obviously, but also because he came in to the administration in July of 2017. And one of the things that the special counsel wanted to ask him was essentially a narrow set of questions, and that has to do with some reporting that was out there that the president had ordered Don McGahn, his White House counsel at the time, to order the firing of Robert Mueller, the special counsel, and the internal behind the scenes of when that story broke. The New York Times reported the story, and the president blew up at Don McGahn, and he wanted Don McGahn to go out and deny the story. Don McGahn refused. And so Don Kelly was essentially a witness to whatever was happening on behind the scenes there, Brianna. And, you know, we know that Don McGahn has already gone in multiple times to provide interviews with the special counsel. So essentially what Mueller wanted from Kelly was to corroborate the information that he already had from McGahn and from other places.
Because he's talked to McGahn. We know at length he has talked to McGahn, the former White House counsel. The White House counsel's office initially fought the Mueller request here, Dana. Right. Well, what we were told is that, you know, when things changed, when Emmett Flood came in to the Trump legal team inside the White House, he was much more strict, shall we say, about who and who would not talk to the special counsel's team, particularly when it comes to current White House staffers. And the Mueller team had to prove was that John Kelly would be the only person who could answer the questions that they had. And so under those auspices, those guidelines, those parameters, that is when Kelly was allowed to go and talk to the Mueller team. And who did they have to prove that to? Was that a situation where the White House understood from the Mueller context of what they wanted to ask?
Right.
That only, like, for example, what Evan was just talking about, that if Kelly was a witness to a conversation, only Kelly could answer questions about being witness to that conversation.
The counsel's office determining,
The White House counsel's office, which had objected to it, finally they had a negotiated solution whereby you say, okay, I'm going to ask these are the limited set of questions, and John Kelly is the only person who can provide that information. It's an information that we need for this investigation. It's part of the obstruction of justice investigation. And John Kelly is the only one who can provide this information.
It's a fascinating report. I want to bring in our legal minds. We have Shan Wu and Laura Coates with us, both of them former federal prosecutors and CNN legal analysts. Laura, when you hear this reporting, what is your reaction, especially as we know that the narrow set of questions have to do with obstruction of justice?
But who else, who has not spoken to Mueller's team? That's really a central
Roger
issue.
Stone?
Well, and why? And who has not spoken to some people who then become defendants past, Michael Cohen, Mishra, et cetera? You have this issue coming up. And the first thing that strikes me as the most curious here is that there is corroboration for them to want to speak to this person already. Nobody asked the question as a prosecutor. Mueller's team has proven time and again they actually have corroboration. They have either hard statements or documents in some form or fashion before they'll actually ask these questions. And so in many ways, they're lining up against what they already have, and they're more...
Soft and warm. into what the special counsel is looking at. They were
shower me with your sweet love.